Hello, this is Janet Michael. In addition to hosting The Valley Today each weekday from 12:30 to 1 on the River 953, I also produce podcasts. And I'm excited to introduce you to a new podcast series in partnership with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative called We Are REC. Every week, we'll be releasing a new podcast where we interview different people from REC about a host of different topics. We'll get tips for saving money on your electric bill. We'll talk about renewable energy and the impact it can have in our communities. We'll even get some behind-the-scenes info about what happens when the power goes out in a storm. We're going to talk to linemen, energy advisors, board members, even the CEO. Don't miss out on information about community grants, scholarships, REC-hosted events, and more. Get every single episode as they're released on our website under the podcast tab at theriver953.com, or you can subscribe for free in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or on Spotify, anywhere you listen to a podcast. Just search for We Are REC. We are in the studio today with Willie Williams and Eric White. They are safety coordinators and trainers with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative, and we are going to talk about safety, which is, I guess, probably one of the number one priorities. Aside from keeping my power on, the next thing in line would be keeping me safe as a member and all of your linemen and your employees safe dealing with electricity on a regular basis. Would you agree with that, Eric?
Absolutely.
So what kinds of things do you guys do? I mean, you put a high importance on it. How important is safety stress to you guys as the coordinators from Rappahannock Electric?
It's extremely important. Of course, we want all our employees to go home in the same condition that they came in that morning, or better, if possible.
So what kinds of things do you guys do to make sure that the employees are safe on the job? I'm sure there are so many different employees doing different types of work, it gets a little complicated.
Absolutely. And the tasks, like the guys that work on the high voltage lines, they go through years of training, you know, at least 4 years of a schooling before they really get hands on. Also, we do training classes every year. And matter of fact, we did a training class today on medic first aid, which is a very valuable tool for our guys.
Medic safety never would have crossed my mind as something you would be training in or having them understand.
Unfortunately, dealing with voltage and our guys dealing with voltage, it's very unforgiving. If there's an electrical contact, or God forbid there's an electrical contact, there's a pretty good chance your heart's going to stop.
Oh, yeah. So that's
so
pretty
important. The guys need to be trained on how to help their fellow coworkers, get them back going, so to speak.
So do all of the linemen in particular have to go through these trainings, and do they have to pass a test? Do you do updates and
yes,
things
ma'am.
Like that?
Yes, ma'am. When we talk about medic first aid, they have to have that training every 2 years, and they actually show us hands-on. They actually have a dummy there, a CPR dummy, that they have to show us their hands-on skills. And
so with the medic training, everybody, does all staff have to go through that? Is it just the linemen? I mean, are there people? William Wilfong was here a couple of months ago and did a podcast episode, and I didn't think to ask him, when you guys go out on a call, whether it's during a storm or to just do regular maintenance, are there people on the truck that aren't necessarily linemen that aren't going to go up, or is everybody kind of the same thing?
On a day-to-day basis, just your average outages. You know, we have outages from time to time, whether it be squirrels. A small thunderstorm comes through and it's maybe just a handful off. That's mostly going to be your linemen. Now, when it's something like a hurricane or a devastating thunderstorm, snowstorm, ice storm, it's going to be all hands on deck. So you're going to have people that would normally be in the office that will be out in the field helping out as well.
Do they have the option of sitting in on some of these trainings?
By OSHA law, anybody works over 50 volts, which most of our guys that are in the field are going to work over 50 volts have to take it. So we offer it out to anybody that doesn't work over 50 volts is optional. And I think we're probably around 90% participation, even in our call centers and stuff like that. People really want to learn. Because, I mean, it's on and off the job. I mean, it could help you at home just as much as it could.
I would be that person because
absolutely.
You don't know when you're going to need that. And it's like knowing how to do CPR. You may never use it in your life, but that one time when you need it and you don't know it, you're going to wish that you did.
And a lot of times during the class, we'll tell them, you know, I hope you never have to use this. I hope the next time you do it is when you come back in 2 years for your refresher training.
So what other kinds of annual safety training things do you do?
We do stuff related to some of the tools we use, or we call it PPE, our personal protective equipment. We do classes. Try to do them yearly on, you know, the use and care of your PPE. For our linemen, that is the thing that keeps them safe from that high voltage, whether it be the rubber gloves and the rubber sleeves you might see the guys wear out in the field, or rubber blankets that we put on the line. All that stuff needs to be cared for so that when you need it or when you utilize it, you know it's in good working condition.
My husband works for a company, and they once a month do what they call truck inspections.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do a random inspection to make sure that everything that all of his technicians need is in the truck, that it's in good working order, that batteries aren't dying, things along that line. So
right.
It's kind of the same thing.
Kind of the same thing.
So are they responsible? I mean, is each lineman assigned his own truck and he's responsible for keeping everything up to date on that particular truck? I'm gonna force Willie here to say something, because he told me before we turned on the mics that he was a lineman. So I know he can answer this question.
Yes, ma'am. The guys are assigned a truck, probably more assigned to one man, and then there'll be another man with him. But yes, they got a log book. They got to record, keep record of a pre-trip and post-trip. They fly the trucks in the mornings to make sure everything's working correctly. They also have first aid kit, fire extinguishers on the truck, and they got to be checked. First aid kit, they check it every week, and then monthly they do make sure the fire extinguishers are good. And then some of the trucks have AEDs on them now. Working
on
getting them on every truck. So that's also another monthly inspection for them.
And then another part of the training, I would guess, too, because
Absolutely.
While everybody thinks they're kind of simple to use, when you're in the heat of the moment, you still have to be sure you know how to use it.
It's a very valuable tool. And luckily, the prices have come down over the years. They're getting more and more available.
Now, on the list that I have here of some of the annual safety trainings, one of them is a chainsaw. That
mm-hmm.
seems like that would go without saying. So do you have to go through actual visual demonstrations of things like that?
We do classroom some. We have had hands-on training. Besides high voltage, trees are probably one of the most dangerous things we deal with. I mean, you don't know the pressures. If they're laying on the line, cutting them off the line can be very, very dangerous.
So you guys really do kind of have to know, be an arborist to a certain degree, because you got to know which way a branch is going to swing or which way it's going to fall when you're trying to cut it loose from a line or any of those kinds of things.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you find that it's difficult with some of the linemen and some of the staff that do this job every day, that they think, I don't need this because it's common sense, or I do this all the time? Because I would think that's sometimes where something could go wrong.
Of course, you know, you always get to griping, but you know, I think they're ribbing us more than they are griping. At the end of the day, everybody knows that it's very, very important information, and you never know when you might have to use it. Right back to the medic first aid, you know. You can tell the guys that really take that seriously.
Well, and I noticed we talked a minute ago about members and how some of this stuff, you know, you've got some of your staff that aren't linemen. They're not out there dealing with it on a regular basis. Are there things that REC does that they give tips and suggestions and advice to just their members, maybe not so much in-house employees, to kind of communicate things like that to be safe?
We do have a Power Lines magazine that they send out. There's also a Cooperative Living magazine that goes out that has all kinds of tips and precautions and stuff to help the member.
Now, do you guys ever go to school groups or go to schools and do demonstrations and talk to kindergartners and fifth graders and high school kids about safety things and kind of give them an idea of what you do and things that you do to be safe when you're doing it?
Absolutely. I think we do close to 300 community events a year.
Wow.
All around our territories. And it's anything from schools to local fire and EMS to give them tips on how to be safe around power lines.
When John Arp was here doing a podcast a few weeks ago, we were talking. I had told him that when William Wilfong was here, he referenced linemen as the forgotten first responders. And there was something about that phrase that just stuck with me, because I never really thought of it that way, but he's exactly right. And I had mentioned it to John during our conversation, and he said that very thing, that a lot of times it's your linemen that have to get out to remove a down power line before your rescue squad or your fire trucks or any of those emergency services can get through. So you guys actually work with them too to kind of give them an idea of what's okay to do and what's not okay to do.
Absolutely. I mean, we relay the same information to them that we do our members. I mean, if you see a down power line, stay away from it. You never know when it could be energized or become energized.
And it's not always obvious, right? I mean, we see in the movies where sparks are coming out of them and you think, okay, that one must still be live. But that's probably not always the case, is it?
No, not always. I mean, we have different types of construction also. There's cable out there that's covered that looks like a communication wire if it's down. And that wire there is poly covering, so it can be energized. And we've seen it many times lay on the ground energized.
And people would think, oh, that's just a cable line, or it's not necessarily a power line. So they get out of the car to move it out of the way, and now we've got a problem.
Absolutely.
Yes, ma'am.
Have you guys ever been in a situation where you've come up on something like that and you've had to use your medic training on a regular individual, or have you been lucky so far?
Knock on the desk here. Not that I'm aware of, not since I've been at the company.
Wow, so that's a good track record, because that means what you're doing and teaching people how to be safe is at least working and they're staying away from stuff.
Most of the general public know, or most of our members know, that to stay away from downed power lines. It can get scary during a major storm when trees are down. The wire can get all wrapped up in trees, and it'd be very hard to see.
Well, and especially at night.
Right, especially at night. You know, we ask, you know, be aware of your surroundings, and if you know a power line was there and there's a tree laying in the vicinity, you know, stay away from the tree, because the tree can also conduct electricity.
Oh, I didn't know that.
People try to be helpful when they're out there also. You get a big hurricane and people have been out of lights for a while, you know, like, hey, I can cut that tree off the line for you. Please don't. Please don't. Because that tree can be a so-called path to ground. And if you stick your chainsaw in there, then you became the path to ground.
Wow.
And the electricity can run through you.
So are some of the other trainings that you do with your linemen in particular things about driving? One of the things that William and I talked about when he was here is sometimes getting to where some of these outages are isn't the easiest thing, especially during a storm. If you've got, you know, ice on the ground or you've got snow or that sort of thing, they've got to drive in some pretty treacherous conditions to get to where an outage is in order to restore the power. Is that part of what you guys do from a safety perspective? Do they have to take the big trucks out and do the cones in and around a parking lot? And
no, occasionally we have had, like I said, safety rodeo, and we've done something like that.
We have set up courses at our safety rodeos to drive like a vehicle through, kind of a practice that way.
Kind of like an obstacle course, and they have to get from point A to point B with the least amount of problems.
Right, and anymore we kind of focus too on distracted driving. You know, just keeping the message out there. You know, we have radios in our trucks, we all have cell phones, and you get in a major storm situation and your radio's going off and your phone's going off, people are calling, you know, to, you know, take your time, be safe, get to where you're going, then they answer those things, because there is a lot of distractions.
So when you're doing the different trainings, do you like call somebody up out of the audience that's sitting there and say, okay, you just got this call and this is, you're on scene and this is what you've got, I want you to walk me through how you're gonna do what? Do you are you that guy?
We're not. We try not to put people underneath on the firing line, I guess. Our crews, when they go out and they're going to go to a job, and whether it be an outage call or whether it be hooking up a new house, somebody's built a new house, we have to hook up power to it. We have what we call a job briefing. Before they start the job, the whole crew gathers around and they talk about the job. They identify the hazards of the job and what precautions they're going to take to mitigate those hazards. And like I said, that goes on with every job to make sure that from the man, the most seniority, all the way down to the youngest person on the job site knows their role and knows the hazards of the job site before they start.
Have there been situations where linemen have come back to you from a training perspective and said, dude, you got to add this to your training because you're never going to believe what we had to deal with today? And it's been something just completely off the wall that you wouldn't have expected?
Absolutely. That's the great thing about our employees. They're always coming up with ideas. And last year we implemented something where they could present their ideas to us or submit their ideas to us. If they have a safety suggestion, whether it be certain PPE that they think we ought to have, or maybe it's a certain training they think we ought to have. And then they can also report a near miss if something almost happened.
Oh, those are good to know.
Otherwise, you didn't get hurt, but you could have. The possibility was there. We really like people to submit them because we learn a lot from those.
So have there been situations where you've had to go out? I mean, how often do you have to go out on a call or something like that? Do you do an after the fact if something does happen, you have to go out and kind of assess the situation?
Willie and myself, we'll go out if it's not a very bad storm, but if we have people working, we would go out and just visit the crews. And, you know, make sure everything's good and see if they need anything. If we're going to go out and help restore power, it's going to be during a major, major event, like a major hurricane, when we need all the people we can. That's when we come in.
So what happens in a situation where it's just something like a transformer blows? I mean, do you guys have different safety protocols that you follow based on what the situation is that you're going into?
Safety culture don't change. I mean, we still have our tailboards. We still wear our PPE. We still cover up and protect ourselves and protect the public. And we work as efficient as we can to get the members' power back on.
So the goal pretty much is just to instill that basic safety training and understanding so that no matter what situation anybody is faced with when they go out, they at least have do this, then double check this, and then do that. So it doesn't really matter if it's something like replacing a power pole, a meter box, a transformer, or you've got a tree down on 15 different places because a storm has gone through.
Yes, I mean, but every incident could be different. I mean, of course, you got to identify, you know, spot all the hazards and mitigate that and then, you know, work on restoring the power.
So what kinds of hazards would somebody be looking for? I mean, if they go out and it's a storm, say we've had a massive thunderstorm that's come through, they roll up into a residential neighborhood that everybody is out of power and you can just visually look around and see 10 or 12 trees that are laying across various poles. I mean, what kinds of things do you instruct your guys from a safety perspective? What should they do first? What are you asking them to do first?
We're going to find out which way the line is fed, and then we're going to find out, make sure it's open, and then we're going to work on testing it, make sure it's positive, assure that it's de-energized, and then we're going to ground it and stuff before we handle it.
How do you guys test to see if it's de-energized? I mean, do you have a special tool that you use, or is it you can tell because you've been in it for a while from looking at it?
No, we've got a couple different voltage detectors and testers to tell us if it's energized or not.
And then how do you de-energize it if it's not? Does that have to happen back at dispatch, or do you guys have the ability to do that there on site?
Some circuits dispatch has capabilities of opening up, but we have to get a device or like we could have like a cutout, like a fuse on a pole that we can run a stick up and open it up or go up in a bucket and open it. Or it might be a control box on the ground where we can open it up.
But that's something none of us as regular people, members or otherwise, should ever think we're going to try. You mentioned earlier, you know, the Good Samaritans that think they're going to help you guys out.
Right.
That is not something any of us are capable of doing.
We use special equipment, and like the sticks Willie we're talking about, they're tested to 100,000 volts. So it's safe for us to use those sticks too. Make sure the power is de-energized.
I've only ever had an experience with electricity on a home level. You plug something in and it shorts out and you get that shock, or it's something that isn't nearly to the degree that you guys are dealing with. But none of you seem afraid. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's something that you're afraid of. Is it a matter of fear, or is it just a matter of being aware?
I don't think we necessarily have a fear of it. If we do what we're trained to do and keep ourselves safe by wearing our PPE and covering up and testing and grounding. I mean, if we follow all our rules and everything, I think everybody, you feel pretty comfortable.
And that's probably a lot of what you talk about when you go to some of the schools and talk to some of the younger kids, is just being aware and giving them tips and things like that. You're kind of saying the same thing. You're just applying it in a different way.
Right. Like if you were going to go to a elementary school and talk to that age group, you'd warn them of the dangers of maybe flying kites. You know, don't fly kites around power lines. There are certain circumstances where that kite string could become energized. We try to talk to, and like adults, if you're going to talk to adults, or you tell them about the dangers of damage, using damaged extension cords in their homes, or putting a rug over an extension cord. You know, if they plug in the Christmas tree and then put a rug over it, I mean, all that does, it allows the cord to sit there and get hot.
Oh, wow. I never thought about that. I've not done that. But yeah, I wouldn't think. I would think being over the actual cord part is fine. Just don't throw something over the
right.
outlet itself.
It could cause it to become hot. You know, most of your extension cords have three plugs on them, and one of them being the ground plug. And everybody's seen somebody go over to the outlet and rip the cord out so they don't have to walk all the way to the outlet to unplug it.
Okay, I will tell you, I've been guilty, not so much of that, but I've been guilty of having things plugged into a power strip where I put my foot on the power strip and pull the cord up because it's just too much trouble to bend over.
Right, and you can break one of the prongs off or that grounding prong, so now you've lost your grounding in that cord, and if you overload it, it could cause it to heat up and catch fire. Talking about the power strips, you know, don't overload those power strips. Read manufacturer's recommendations on how much load you should put on it, and don't overstress it. And try to tell people, buy a good power strip.
Oh, yeah, that's the one thing.
If you buy a $20 power strip, you're getting a $20 power strip.
Do you find that a lot of people, when they know what it is you do for a living, they start asking you random electricity-safe questions and stuff?
Right, and, you know, mainly we're outside the home. But, of course, we do deal with electricity, so we get the in-home questions. It might be something about a GFCI, the receptacles or a breaker that you put in your house, and they're always a great idea. If you're hanging a picture and you put a nail through the wall, and you miss the stud and accidentally hit the wire that's nailed to that stud, one of your electrical wires, that GFCI is designed to trip almost instantaneously.
And that keeps you from getting blown across the room.
Getting hurt, I guess.
Do you get people asking you random things like how to put fires out, electrical fires and things like that? But you're never supposed to throw water on an electrical fire,
no,
right?
No, water conducts. Never use water to try to put out electrical fire. They make what they call a combination fire extinguisher, or ABC, that has the right chemical in there to smother the fire. You're pretty much smothering an electrical fire. And baking soda, you can use baking soda. If you don't have one of those ABCs, of course, we recommend that everybody keep a fire extinguisher, especially in your kitchen. But you could use baking soda, or if you do have a fire blanket, you could throw a fire blanket over top of it.
Are there things that, as a homeowner, I should look out for on the outside of my house to notice whether maybe are there signs that a transformer is going to blow or that a meter box is going to go bad that I should be aware of and call you before maybe it does? Does that help in any way, shape, or form?
I would say any, like around your meter socket, if you see like an opening, or a lot of times we'll have a conduit coming up in the bottom of it, and then as the house ages, it settles, and it'll separate, and you'll have exposed wire there. I mean, that's one thing you need to notify us when we come, and so nobody can reach in there and contact anything.
Also, if you're working in your yard or cleaning your gutters or whatever it may be, and you have a ladder, you know, always look up, look around, see if you happen to have a power line anywhere close. Especially if you have aluminum ladder that does conduct, or any type of ladder can conduct. But be very careful when around power lines. Identify where your power lines are in your yard before you go out there and start your job. While we're talking about like yard work and all, if you're going to plant a bush or if you're going to dig in your yard for any reason, you know, call Virginia 811, Miss Utility. And get them out there. And they'll send somebody, I believe, even within like 3 days to mark, let you know where your power is, where your telephone is, if it could be sewer or whatever's on your property. That way you don't accidentally dig into something.
Because that's the last thing you want to do is not just because of how dangerous it is, but those lines typically aren't just for your house.
Right.
And if you're living in a neighborhood and you suddenly dig a hole and now every neighbor in a 3-mile radius has
right.
lost something because of you, they're not going to be happy.
And once again, it's electricity is not very forgiving. If you were to dig into one of our lines, you could be severely injured, if not worse.
When you come up on a site that has underground power lines, do you have different things that you have to do? Is it safer for you guys if they're not in the air than otherwise?
No, I would not say it's safer. I mean, overhead lines, you can see a problem on it. Underground, you know, you don't really see it. We have a whole other set of test equipment to locate a fault and bed underground, and then you're sectionalizing pieces, and of course we try to pick up to the fullest point that we can before we can, and then we repair.
And do you guys have certain, and I don't want to call them contests because that just sounds really tacky, but things where we're going to go X number of days without an incident, or we're going to see how many months we can do, or whoever goes the longest and doesn't have an incident, they get free dinner or something like that. Do you do those kinds of incentives, or is it just implied we're going to do a good job and we're going to be as safe as we possibly can with it?
We do track that from office to office. Each office has their own record, so to speak. And it's not really a contest as much as looking out after your fellow coworker. And I guess maybe it is a little bit of bragging rights. If, you know, I got 10 years without a lost time and you only have 5, but we want to see zero. We're, you know, really and truly want to see zero. And this is a very, parts of REC's jobs are very, very dangerous. So course, we want to see zero.
Well, and I would imagine too that when those incidents do come up, they're good training for you as a training mechanism, because you can look and say, hey, this happened and this is not something we ever would have thought. So now you have an avenue to be able to say, okay, we need to expand our next training session to include something along these lines.
That's exactly right. We're always learning. Always learning. And when you have an incident, there's not an incident. We're very fortunate. We don't have a lot of incidents. Stuff does happen, but we learn from every one of them. There's always something you can take away from it and learn.
Well, I tell you what, I've learned a lot today, other than I should bend down and just unplug my stuff out of the power strip. So I'm gonna take that advice, and I'm going to be a little more active and take care of everything. Is there something that we haven't talked about from a safety perspective, either for the general public, for REC members, or for what you do to make sure that everybody on REC staff stays safe? Is there something we haven't talked about that we probably should have mentioned?
other than just reiterating to the members, you know, please stay away from down power lines and down trees, and we're going to get you on as safely and as quickly as we possibly can.
And I think the key, Casey and I have talked about this, I've talked about it with several people on the podcast, the key is reporting it. Use the Smart Hub app, call, use the phone, but don't assume that the neighbor next door has reported the outage, because they're probably sitting on their sofa assuming that you have also reported the outage.
Exactly right. Please report your outages and know that you might be the only one off. It could be like a single transformer problem, or it could be the main line when everybody's off. But please report them. You can go to our website. There's a lot of good safety information on our website that's available anytime. You can go on there.
I'll put the link in the show notes.
That's great. And look up different safety topics there, too.
And stay inside. I mean, if it is something, just don't try to help, because you would prefer to have to do the whole job yourself from ground zero than to get somewhere and know that somebody has tried to help you and either hurt themselves or made the job more complicated, I guess.
Well, it's more we don't want to see anybody get hurt. Just, you know, please stay away from down power lines.
But I do appreciate the two of you taking some time to come talk to me today.
Thank you.